Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to an anniversary episode of the Mouth Fist Podcast. It is episode 11, the last episode, episode 10 not being a real episode, and episode 9 being a year ago. So we're right on schedule.
Has it really been a year?
It has been a year last week since we promised we would talk about Prometheus. And I'm sure by now everyone has heard as much as they ever wanted to hear about Prometheus.
Well, before we get into any of that, I'm Steve Saunders, and this other guy is Ryan Speck.
Indeed.
And together we are a wonderful gay couple.
And we can now get legally married in the state of Washington.
Huzzah! And get stoned doing
it. The world has changed since our last podcast.
It has. It's totally changed. Dogs and cats are living together. It is mass hysteria.
We're legally married now, and we run a medical marijuana farm.
It's true. We do it remotely. I'm in BC, but British Columbia is basically Washington State. And Eastern BC is just like Eastern Washington, full of backwards rednecks with an occasional Island of Hope here and there, not Ritzville, and of course. So Vancouver Island is kind of like Olympia, the Olympic Peninsula. We can see the Olympic Peninsula from where we are here. So in Victoria, and Ryan and I do this long distance gay marriage and pot growing farm thing to appease our inner Atlantean spirit guides, I think. Not to mention to corner the homeopathic market. We put the homo in homeopathy. Terrible.
Who doesn't?
Let's discuss Prometheus.
Our water has the best memory of all water. It's top of the
market. That is true. Memory water. That's right. Fuck your vitamin water. We got memory water here, kids. And next up, we got mammary water, which is for babies and hentai perverts, I guess. But that was another episode, which we do at some point. We will have to do a follow-up to our bodies ourselves, because I'm sure a lot has happened in the world of porn since the last time we talked about it. But I think we should discuss Prometheus really fast, and I merely mean it. Like, I'm going to sum up Prometheus, since we mentioned we were going to talk about it last time. I think I should mention that Prometheus had an excellent character with a bunch of cardboard cutouts and was an utter disappointment. Ryan, what did you think?
It was a beautiful looking, egregious pile of shit.
Exactly. It's like getting home it's like going out and finding a one night stand with probably the most beautiful woman or man, depending which way you swing, ever. Like, you're just like, oh my god, I've never been naked with someone like this. And then they start talking about how they're a child killer, and you're like, fuck, do I?
And then
stick
once
around?
You get turned on, once that really turns you on, then you find out they have no penis or vagina.
That's
they're
true. And then
like a Barbie doll and
like a Ken doll. Yeah, exactly. That really disappointed me as a kid, by the way. But I was going to say that also, not only that, but it's like finding out, you start talking to them, and their best friend is a robot, a passionless robot, a sexy passionless robot, by the way, which it's the strangest thing. I saw this film, which, as you said, is a beautiful pile of shit, and yet I think that Michael Fassbender should get an Oscar for his performance. As horribly written as it was. Who wrote that movie? Was that Who wrote that, Ryan? Who wrote that movie? Who do we blame?
Damon Lindelof's untalented ass wrote that egregious pile of shit.
Is that the same guy that's been doing the Star Trek movies?
Has been co-writing or cleaning up the Star Trek movies. I forget if it's the people that did the Pirates of the Caribbean movies or the people that did the Transformers movies. I think it was the ones that wrote the Transformers movies who are doing the Star Trek movies, and then Damon Lindelof comes in and helps with the writing and does like drafts anymore or something. More so than that, he's always going to be the person that made us watch Lost and then shit all over it at the end.
Made like, you watch Lost. Right, I've never seen... I've only ever seen
us
one episode of Lost.
As the collective of humanity.
Okay, I don't count.
Us as human beings, he made us watch the shit and then pissed it right down his leg.
Well, this shit happens. All I know is Prometheus was totally outdone by Pandorum, which I thought was a much better movie, tighter story. Had its flaws, but I've seen Pandorum like, I don't know, 5 times and enjoyed it every time. I've seen Prometheus twice, and Yeah.
I liked Prometheus kind of as I watched it. I was enjoying watching it because it was at least visually interesting. But it's one of those things. Mm-hmm. I walked out of it, went to a restaurant and started having dinner afterwards with my lady. And while we were sitting there, started talking about the movie. And the more I talked about the movie, the more I started realizing that it didn't make any goddamn sense. And then I started thinking about all the plot holes. And then I started thinking about how shitty it was. And it was like a movie I basically, in the course of a meal, talked myself out of enjoying. I went from kind of enjoying it to... It kind of like... It was like being hypnotized or something. It's like I walked out of it thinking like... Oh, that was okay. And then, like, a little bit later, it just kind of wore off. The magic spell left, and I thought to myself, holy God, that was a fucking awful piece of shit. What the fuck were they thinking?
I felt the same way about Prometheus and about Conan the Barbarian, which I saw one after the other, I think.
Hate Conan the Barbarian, but it's expectedly mediocre. It wasn't a very good movie. It wasn't a bad movie, I guess. I mean, I tried watching Call the Conqueror again recently, and that makes it hard to hate Conan.
Ooh boy. Yeah, Kevin Sorbo.
I saw that movie in the theater.
You told me that.
I've seen that
and
movie
I was like,
at least
I,
twice.
That right there is a mark of shame pride or pride shame. That's actually a badge of honor, my friend.
There's been a bad movie out in the 90s. I probably saw it.
And see, I saw Dr. Giggles and Lawnmower Man. I saw Dr. Giggles and the Lawnmower Man in theater, so.
I skipped Dr. Giggles because it didn't look very interesting, and I was too young to go see Lawnmower Man because it was R-rated, though we ended up seeing it on video, and boy, was that a fucking disappointment.
Oh boy, howdy.
When you're a, like, tween or whatever, and you're over at a friend's house, and they've got an R-rated movie, and it turns out to be Lawnmower Man.
Well, that's fucking poor. I'm thinking, let's stop focusing on the negative and vagina snakes you shouldn't fuck with as a biologist. And I like to talk really briefly, let's see if you're okay with this, talking about a movie that I watched with a big shit-eating grin on my face, walked out of the theater, loved it even more talking about it, watched it again the other day for like the 5th or 6th or 8th or 11th time, love it still, and that's Dread. What did you think when you saw it?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was well made. It wasn't really plot heavy, obviously.
No.
The plot was pretty thin. It's like, we're going to go into this place and we're going to kill a bunch of people.
It could be summed up at the end with a drug bust. Like, what happened in there? Drug bust. The perps were uncooperative. That's pretty much the entire film in a nutshell. So.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain degree, the plot was thin enough that you probably could have removed a lot of the scenes from the middle of the movie, and if you cut them out, you wouldn't notice the difference.
Yeah, there are some things in the film that lead
honestly, I wanted
to...
it to be a little bit longer. It could have stood to be like,
well, yeah, me too,
20 minutes longer.
I was gonna say one of the things about the movie I really liked, though, were little things that lead up to a sequel, like wondering about what Dredd's backstory is when Anderson talks about him being angry, and of course why Anderson was selected to be a judge in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Those are only things that like hardcore Judge Dredd fans could even notice and surmise what they're being said for, because Judge Dredd's a clone and all this other crap. But the movie itself was just a straight up like what that's, you know, like what they normally say that these things are, a high octane thriller, a thrill ride, lots of carnage. At no point are you ever like, oh my god, will Judge Dredd make it? And well, I suppose when he shot through the back, that kind of sucked. But
surprised they did that, but I mean, it quickly patched himself up anyway. But I mean, it was a really good film. I watched it once by myself, then watched it again with Sharia, and it ended up being, I mean, I had fun both times. I enjoyed watching it. I think she enjoyed it. I mean, she didn't love it or anything, but I mean, it was entertaining. I mean, it's a well-made movie. They did a lot with the little budget they had. They,
they
made a good movie out of very little, which is impressive on its own.
Exactly. And my partner, she said that we saw it in the theater, and I would say it's the best 3D movie I've seen so far. Now, I haven't seen many. I think Captain America, Conan the Barbarian, and Prometheus were the only 3D movies I'd seen by that point. And Dredd was awesome to me. To her, she found the 3D scenes to be taking a bit long, and then when she finally saw it in 3D, she really liked the film. It is a straight up slam bang, drug bust, kill them all. All the actors are great. He even pulls off "I am the law" without sounding cheesy. The trailer, I feel, for that movie really sunk it. And I know that, from what I understand, the director wasn't very happy with how the trailer turned out because it didn't sell the movie. It made it seem cheesy. And there isn't, really one cheesy moment in that entire film. It's just a straight-up murder fest. And anything cheesy is kind of implied, but it's one of the most brutal films I've seen. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is also just there's nothing for Americans to associate it with other than the Judge Dredd movie from the 90s.
That's correct.
No, which point of context.
Which, as a lifelong Dreadhead, the first film nailed the aesthetics of the comic book much better. They changed the new Dredd film to make it more realistic. The old Stallone film, they really changed a lot, or they didn't change. They changed the attitude. So, really, if you took the Stallone film and added the writing and attitude of the new film, you'd have the quintessential, just like 2080 Dredd. But I don't think that would appeal to anybody, because the Dredd of the comic book is really just a brutal satire, as opposed to the film, which I don't think anybody else want to watch because it'll be like a comedy. Yeah, so I know it did really well on DVD. I was really happy to hear about that. It did way better than people thought it would do.
Yeah, so, I mean, you think studios would be more used to the fact that most movies these days do better on DVD than they do in theaters. It's only certain movies that make any money, and they make all the money.
Yep, exactly.
Not and everything can be Iron Man.
Exactly, and the only people I know that didn't like it, which are few, one person told me they didn't like it because they couldn't follow the plot, which I then asked him if he'd had a head injury in his life, and because that's brain damage, because it's not that difficult to follow, and another person just said they just didn't like it, and maybe that's just not their kind of thing. My mom found it incredibly violent, a little bit too violent for her taste. But it's, Carl Urban was fantastic, and Olivia Thirlby was fantastic. I got to interview her, and she is every bit as nice as her character seems in the movie. So, you know, she just seems like a very nice person, but, I think we've actually already talked about Dredd before, but you hadn't seen it yet, so that's, perhaps we should move on.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot that's happened in the past year, I guess.
Right, we could cover it all, but what do you think about covering something recent, like the last movie you saw?
Last movie I saw was 2 days ago. We went and caught a nice weekday showing of Man of Steel, which was perfect for the movie it was, because when you go to a movie on a weekday evening after it's been open for a weekend, it's pretty slow and there's nobody really there and it's kind of quiet, and it's not like the full movie going experience of being in a packed crowded theater, but it's not like being in some abandoned movie shanty. And that's kind of like what Man of Steel is. It's okay, and it feels like you're going out and doing something, but it's not packed full of adventure and excitement while not being terrible.
See, I haven't seen it yet. I saw the previews. I am pretty sure I will enjoy it, even though I think Superman is one of the most ridiculously stupid characters I've ever seen created. At least to have
Superman's a
monthly...
pile of shit. Yeah, he sucks.
Okay. I don't find Superman... He's kind of one of those characters
to me. He's not an entertaining character.
He can be. If you do it right.
He's kind of... Well, yeah, but it's hard to do it right because he's bland, he's vanilla, he's, like, they like to play up the jingoistic white bread farm boy angle, while also the fact that it's hard to come up with interesting things to do with him because he has so little conflict. You have a guy with godlike power, which means you have to come up with someone else of godlike power to actually, like, give him a physical challenge. So you end up having to give him a bunch of mental and emotional challenges, which is not probably what you want to see in Superman.
Right. Well, this film is also a reboot, right? So it's...
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
And judging from the... I have never before seen such, I guess, backlash amongst people who, because I guess, now, I guess anybody who listens to a mouth this podcast knows we're going to spoil the shit out of stuff. So, if spoilers bother you.
I haven't heard anything about this movie, so this should be very interesting for me. I haven't heard anyone even speak about it other than I think I read somebody tweeting about it yesterday morning, something about how the marketing executives must be excited that he walked out of Man of Steel thinking to himself, yeah, that wasn't bad. that was the best they could come up with, this movie that he walked out of with a shrug.
Well, it's the thing is, I'm dialed into the nerds, which is unfortunate. That's like saying I like a constant case of herpes. But it's, apparently people are going crazy over, like, the fact that Superman kills Zod at the end. Oh yeah, spoiler. Like, of course, he's gonna defeat Zod, right? What do you think? People are like, oh my God, he spoiled it for me. Whatever.
Yeah. Everything is spoiled when you listen to us, but,
Well, not only that, but it's all spoiled when it's Superman. Come on.
If you want a little more clarity around it, at the very end, like, they're having a big super fist fight, and they are fairly.
Oh my God,
matched.
Ryan! I didn't see that coming.
But they crash. Like, Superman is not just the Man of Steel; he is the Man of infrastructure destruction. He wrecks the entirety of Metropolis. We walked out of the movie, and I mentioned it, and Sharia was like, "Why didn't he just get the fuck out of the town? Why did they stay in the middle of the city, destroying everything? It's like a goddamn Godzilla movie. You think that he was the Incredible Hulk? He's just wrecking buildings left and right, letting the entirety of Metropolis get leveled."
That question is answered, by the way, by some internet denizen who said that the reason why Superman didn't leave is because if he did, Zod would have just started murdering people. I guess Zod is, a two-dimensional villain.
Why didn't he just drag Zod or whoever he was fighting outside of the city, up into the air, out of the Earth's atmosphere, anywhere other than continuing a fist fight using, buildings to beat people against? He's literally taking him and smashing him into buildings. So why is he doing that, other than the fact that they just like the visual impact of massive scale destruction? But Superman really hates your buildings. Superman wants to level your entire city. He likes it just like a goddamn cornfield. All this shit standing up everywhere. He hates it. He's gonna wreck it.
Well, so he is from...
I guess he ends up in the middle of, like, it looks like a Grand Central Station-y type train station or something. It's all marble and shit. So he crashed into the middle of that, and he's got Zod in, like, a chokehold, and Zod starts blasting with the heat, with, like, the heat vision or whatever the fuck it is. I can't even remember. But he's shooting his laser eyes at, like...
He's at the
citizenry. Yeah, so he's got his laser bear eyes, and he's shooting at the innocent bystanders, and they're working their way burning through the, like, marble, and he's, like, he's basically telling him there's nothing he can do, that he's gonna fucking keep killing humans until everyone is dead, because Superman has destroyed the ability to bring back the Kryptonian race on Earth, so... He proceeds to keep trying to kill humans, so Superman has no choice but to kill him. It's not like he just kills him for funsies. It's and then he like screams and cries about it afterwards like a pussy. So it's not like they've turned Superman into the fucking Punisher. He kills Zod because it is the only possible recourse he has. He did not get sucked back into the Phantom Zone. He was left on Earth. There's nothing you can do to hold Zod, who is equally powerful to Superman. He either had the choice of snapping his neck or letting him continue to kill the human race. So
he had basically to make a choice. Superman was forced to undergo character development. Superman's greatest enemy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I see.
Yes, it. I also like the fact that he never flew. He had never flown before he became Superman. It's like he had never used his powers at all. He had basically tried to repress them and, like, not use them. He had never flown until he put on the suit. He was very greatest American hero in that way. Him, like, trying to fly and shit. But, so he's got all of this stuff he's never done before that he does for the first time. And then Lois tracks him down and figures out he's Clark Kent. About the same time he becomes Superman, she's already tracked him down and figured out who he is. So she knows he's Clark Kent from the very beginning. So I thought that was an interesting twist. So when he goes to work at the Daily Planet at the very end of the movie, she already knows he's Superman. And it, like, is in on it. Which was interesting. And Amy Adams is good, and I like her as Lois Lane, and I just like her in general, so... The actors were all well chosen. I mean, it was a pretty good, well made movie. Zack Snyder's a good director. The problem may be, to a certain degree, the plot is not very interesting, but it's a David Goyer movie, so that's to be expected. It was A+ work for David Goyer. I would give him gold stars to put on his little chart that his mommy lets him keep of the good things he's done and the chores he's completed. The ruiner of Batman films that he is. He likes to taint every comic movie with shittiness, but it was the most minimally shitty thing he's written in a while, so I'll give him that.
That's right. He wrote Dark Knight Return, or no, The Dark Knight, right?
He did story contribution and a little bit of script writing on Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises.
Those films have Blade. Fucking stupid aspects about them that ruin the movies for me.
And I mean, I think he was is the more comic oriented one. He who did the three Blade movies and such. So, I mean, Goyer is brought in to comic book up scripts. He's the one with the comic book related interest. So, I just find him to tend to do the poor job and to kind of drag down movies into being stupid and comic booky as opposed to making them more realistic and interesting and having good plots.
Well, which, if anything,
this is the best he could have done with Superman, I think. At least he could have done. Maybe somebody else could have written a better script, but I don't know. I mean, it was at least good enough in that it had plenty of action. It wasn't just a bland pastoral Superman movie that was mainly about him flying around and trying to date Lois Lane while putting on glasses and hiding from people.
Well, I was going to say Superman in the first couple of movies, or in Superman 2, doesn't he actually kill the Kryptonians as well? I mean, I was reading and being refreshed on, like, because I can't see enjoy Superman 2 beyond the age of 10. And I watched it once as an adult, and I thought it was, well, I'm sorry, Superman fans, but it's dumb as fuck. And so, except for Zod. Zod's awesome, but...
I can't remember what happens except for his special chamber to, like, that he thinks is, like, they think is removing his powers is actually, he's protected inside of it and it removes their powers. So he proceeds to, like, crush Zod's hand and then he, like, throws one of the other ones down, like, throws him down a fucking ice chasm to his death.
Yeah, he's so off he kills
screen,
him.
So there, he's not a bad guy because the person dies off screen. He just throws him over a piece of like set.
Well, everyone in comic book fandom and professionals, like
is it Lois that kills them? It may have been Lois pushes the girl off and she falls to her death.
Well, then Superman should have
went
and caught
her. So maybe Lois is a murderer. So that's
okay.
Well,
Superman...
Everyone believes Margot Kidder has it in her.
Superman should have went and caught her and saved her, if that's the case. Because everyone in the comic books, comic book fans, and also including comic book people like Mark Waid, etc. I know John Byrne freaked out, but when doesn't he freak out, so who cares? I mean, all the guy really has, it's really sad to see such a great comic book legend just turn into basically the, like, a retarded version of Quasimodo. But it's true, man. I mean, the guy is hilarious. I'm sure he's super nice. Like, I've never actually really talked to him other than hate mail from him, so... but the point is...
I don't know, his online persona is of a... ego-driven prick who has a million people telling him how great he is, so he seems to think that when someone disagrees that he is in the right because he has been crowned God King by the nerd police.
Well, you know what? I have sympathy for people like that because I've seen where the God Kings of nerd police live, and it's not... It's like the same kind of place I live in. It's just like an apartment. Like, great. I'm glad it worked out for you being this legend. Hell, I'm wearing a t-shirt that has John Byrne's art on it. I feel for the guy because he's so famous and he probably lives in like a rundown house or some shit. Like they all do. Like it's like being big in comic books doesn't mean shit. So it just means like
being
you have an
ego.
Being
big in comic books is like being the most important guy that works at the McDonald's down your street.
Yeah. I won't say who this was just because just for sake of privacy, but I remember talking to a very famous comic book pro, very famous. And they were, we were talking about money and he made less than my wife did. And my wife is a fucking project manager for a company. So, and he made like 20K less a year than she did. And he's like one of the biggest writers ever in comic books, period.
Yeah. There's very little money in entertainment because nobody wants to pay somebody a lot for it because there's a million people willing to do it for less. Yeah. It's something that people want to do. They want to be known for... Nobody cares about getting known for being an awesome project manager. People want to be known for being a writer. They want to be a creative artist who is paid for their work.
Well,
no matter if that means working working the shit out of them for the rest of their lives just to like scrape by, they're willing to do it.
Well, it's the creators that always get shafted too. So I mean, it's just the way it seems to work. It's like when people will say, "Hey, I want you to write this for me," I'm like, "Okay," and I start doing it, and they're like, "Well, you're gonna get attention." I'm like, "That doesn't pay the bills," or you're going to write this. What do you mean you're going to charge me $85 an hour? I'm like, because you're going to make like $10,000 off of me, you piece of shit. So I really get irritated by...
Yeah.
And in fact, I actually agree completely with Harlan Ellison, as much as a douchebag as he sounds half the time. The more I read and listen to his shit, the more I agree with him and actually begin to like the guy because he's an asshole because he has to be. So
yeah, there's bound to be another asshole who says the same shit we can talk about instead of Harlan Ellison. He's he's just a dickbag in general. So let's find a new asshole who can tell us about the fact that we should be paid for our work.
Well, I
isn't him.
Well, maybe we could talk about his friend Cliff Meth, who is kind of an asshole, but in a good way. And I like Cliff, and but he can also be very tell him how it is kind of thing. So. But he's cool. But yeah, anyway, my point is, what we were talking, Jesus Christ, we were talking about something. How did we get to this?
we were talking
about... John Byrne.
John Byrne freaking out about Superman. Nobody cares about you. You're not that important as a fucking comic writer, but...
Well, he's more important than us. We're yellow journalists, Ryan. We're yellow journalists
You were a yellow journalist. I wasn't...
Shush you.
I wasn't anything.
Whatever, you're racist. You're racist. And so what I'm going to say, though, is that you know, Byrne can rest safely because we're just trying to piggyback his fame to get people to listen to our podcast.
Really?
No.
if you're a Byrne fan and you're listening to this, you should probably just fuck off.
Well, hey, you can be a Byrne fan. I'm a fan of his art. I loved his Alpha Flight run. I always say that whenever I talk shit about him, like that's going to make up for the fact I talk about all this shit about some fat, ugly dude that did all that. So
you have to separate the artist and the art. And when I say Byrne fan, I mean people who are fans of Byrne. I mean,
you putting them on a Byrne notice. Yeah, I use that joke in my column too. So anyway,
the was there more people that freaked out about Superman? Because I didn't read any of it. I didn't hear anyone mention it other than to say like I had one friend that said Man of Steel sucked. He didn't know how like Zack Snyder managed to make a movie that shitty. And then most people were just like, yeah, that was mediocre, but I mean it was okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it.
So I have friends that absolutely loved it because it was just basically a punch-a-thon.
For a Superman movie, it was good. For a comic book-related superhero movie, it was meh.
Yeah.
For, like, a fucking artistic triumph, it was a fucking D. I mean, it was nothing amazing. I appreciate the fact that it was a very, like, Zack Snyder for all people whining about, like, oh my god, it's gonna be all slow motion, and it's gonna be like 300 or something. It was like a very downplayed pastoral sort of movie. It was like a lot of soft focus moments and like landscapes and like Kansas cornfields and shit like that. It wasn't all action. It was...
Well, what do people expect? It's fucking Superman. For fuck's sake, it's something that even my own children, they're like 7 and 9, think Superman's kind of dumb. And I'm not saying that people who like Superman are like small children. You're free to like what you want, but they think Power Rangers are cooler than Superman, okay?
Because like, Power Rangers are cooler than Superman.
Be that as it may. My youngest son Vance, he just turned 7. I asked him if he wanted a big Superman doll I saw at Walmart, and he said no, Superman's dumb, why can't that be? And he said who was it he wanted? Oh, Deadpool. He wanted to be Deadpool, and like, or Doctor Doom, or even Spider-Man. My kids love Spider-Man, and we have to admit that Spider-Man is also really stupid, so, but he just seems cooler than Superman. And it's like, people can love Superman, that's cool, but it's just, I'm just saying that, what do you expect from a Superman movie?
Yeah, during dinner after watching the film, we were discussing the kind of different comic characters, and I was explaining to Sharia, like, who fell under the DC and Marvel camps, that basically... They didn't make movies of DC characters because while Warner Brothers owns it, they every time they get around to thinking about making a movie, they realize how much it's going to cost to make a film based on a comic book, and then they're like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. Why spend $100 million making this piece of shit? Until Marvel started making billions of dollars off of movies, at which point they're like, oh shit, we better make better movies because we've got all these characters. So I start naming off like the people that are DC related, and how none of them are fucking interesting at all. Mm-hmm. They're all boring as shit, and then the villains for all of them are fucking terrible. It was like all the villains for DC characters are shit that sounds like people came up with in 1950.
Well, they did.
They're all hokey as balls, and then... And she, with the exception of Batman, which she likes the Batman movies, she's interested enough in Batman. She was like, all that stuff sounds super dumb with the exception of Batman. It's like, that's DC for you. It's like, we suck with the exception of Batman. It's like, he's the only character that is vaguely interesting. And he realistically isn't even a superhero. He has no powers. He's a guy that beats people up and is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He literally is basically on the same level as a wild stabbing people on street corners hobo.
Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he does dress like a bat. Like, it's true.
But then again, there's a dude that dresses up in a costume and wanders around Seattle and to fight crime.
Oh, that guy, what's his name? Phoenix Jones?
Yeah. Yep, that's it. That's the one.
He just, like, I don't know him. I've seen a couple of interviews with him, and I just don't want to think he's a colossal douche, but I don't know.
But if you really think that you are somehow making a difference by dressing up in a funny costume and wandering around a city and doing nothing, because it's not like he's going to be vigilante beating people up.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I mean, he's gotten vigilante beat up before by people, but...
Well, I was going to say, I lived and worked in Seattle at, like, I worked at nightclubs, and... And let me tell you, and I've been, you know, I've been walking home late at night, and if I was in the process of a violent encounter, which did occur with me with people, and some guy in a superhero costume showed up, I would be immediately concerned for their safety and how mentally ill they were, and would try to help them. And I think most people that I encountered who were violent would probably just be like, would feel sad. They wouldn't want to beat up a guy in a superhero costume. So basically what Phoenix Jones is doing... And these other real-life superhero types, they're ruining the chance that true mentally ill people in costumes have at survival, because they're going to show, they're going to be so sick and tired of these dumbasses showing up, they're going to be like, you know what, fuck you, and shoot them. Because Phoenix Jones hasn't been shot yet. Phoenix Jones hasn't been shot yet. That tells me that people have sympathy for him, because, dude, I mouthed off to a guy one time, he pulled out a gun. That's the fucking big city, okay? It's like, oh my God, and it's, you know, I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time and of the wrong ethnicity. And
Seattle's a pretty pussy-ass city. I can't imagine. Oh,
compared to, like, Detroit or Cleveland, yes.
Compared to, like, almost any, like, L.A., like, I can't imagine, like, any other major city, like, somebody dressing up with as a superhero and not just getting completely destroyed. Just people beating them up for fun.
I yelled at a scalper at Emerald City Comic Con, and he didn't stab me. So, Seattle's obviously a giant pussy town. So, it's like, or wussy town. I don't want to really, because female anatomy is fine. It has nothing to do with people's courage. We'll say wuss town. But I like that about Seattle, to be honest with you. I don't want to be stabbed and killed while I'm trying to go to a comic convention. I don't want to get robbed because, you know, like, I was getting a taco in, like, the neighborhood that isn't the, like the one that's full of, like, rich white people or whatever. I don't want be beat to death by a bunch of drunk punks or something. I don't know. I prefer that, honestly. But, yeah. Yeah, real-life superheroes. Hmm.
But yeah, they're at least more interesting than Superman.
That is true, actually.
That's because very true. At least they seem like human beings with levels, whereas Superman does not. He's boring as shit, and as are all DC characters, and...
No, not all of them. Jonah Hex is pretty interesting, but they didn't make the movie very interesting.
No. I mean... As far as DC superhero characters go, they're
the demon.
Is he really, even really a hero?
Well, I don't know.
It depends Lobo. On how they want to. I guess it depends on how they want to play him this week.
That's true.
Well, since I was gonna DC say, likes to relaunch the entire concept of their milieu every like
yeah,
2 years.
It's like I think Batman's pretty stupid too, but you know, Killing Joke or the Killing Joke or Superman Red Sun or Superman All-Star Superman, that shit's pretty good actually. So it's good in small doses. Like I'll read anything in small doses.
I don't care about most superhero stuff in general. I like movies. I like the concept. I just don't really care about the comics themselves, but Well, yeah, it's like DC's just, their characters have never interested me, and I don't really see what people find interesting about them that are really into DC stuff. I just don't get it. It just seems so weird and antiquated and almost like alien. It's like somebody being really into silent movies these days. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you just being a weird hipster, or what exactly do you see in this that I don't?
That's because DC characters encapsulate a more 1950s aesthetic and time of like the great American dream and all American values and truth, justice, and the American way, which is the polar opposite of what we're going to discuss next, which is Game of Thrones, which basically takes all of that and shits on its face and rapes it. So I'm serious. Like, yeah. Yeah, I can't...
Allow us to spoil that for you now.
Yes, Game of Thrones. So if you're a Game of Thrones fan or haven't caught up yet or whatever, we're going to spoil the shit out of it. But Game of Thrones is such a good show, it should be spoiled for you, and you shouldn't have a problem with it, is what I mean. It should be a good enough show or books to... Because the books have been out there for a long time. Like, some people get very upset about, oh my God, The Red Wedding, you spoiled it. You're like, well, it was 13
it's been
years
10
ago.
Years.
It's been 10 or 13 years since Martin wrote about that shit. So, whatever. Grow up.
Yeah,
there.
You had time.
Yeah. Put on the big boy pants or big girl pants. Put on the big kid pants.
Yeah, that was a big deal a decade ago when people were still talking about it. Now it made it to TV, and now you don't want it ruined.
Mm-hmm. Oh, someone said like that they were upset that I ruined the fact that Ned Stark is executed. And I'm like, the execution of Ned Stark is the crux of the entire series. Like, after yeah, I'm like the second,
the
third,
entire
fourth.
First season builds up to it, and then from there it is the catalyzing event that basically causes everything to go into clusterfuck mode.
And that's because Game of Thrones takes every single trope that we grew up with that's like Arthurian and craps on it. And it's just like this is our hero. Like, what happens to Robb Stark? You know, that this is our big hero, and he's
killed. Interesting. It's interesting reading him talk about his decision making for this stuff. He wants to break away from any trope, so he said, well, Eddard Stark seems like the hero, therefore he has to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing that, he realized apparently very early on, well before he wrote the book, that, well, Rob would have to die too, because the son coming back and taking vengeance for the death of his father is also a huge cliche. Mm-hmm. So it has to be eliminated. So he has to die too. Not just because it will make for an interesting story, but because I don't want people to... I want to do things people aren't going to expect me to do. It's a fucking fantasy series. Fantasy is the most beaten to death, worn out genre there is. So He's going far out of his way to make it interesting.
Now, would you say that both Ned Stark and Robb Stark are a bit different in the books? I didn't have that much sympathy for Ned Stark in the first book, and that's about as far as I got. I read passages with Robb Stark, didn't think Robb Stark was that interesting a character. In the show, they're both characters are fantastic, and I think they changed things a bit, just like they didn't make they didn't make Khal Drogo be essentially a serial rapist like he is in the first book.
So. Yeah, I started to read. I got a Kindle last Friday, so I've had
a Kindle. Oh, a Kindle. Sorry, yeah.
I've had a Kindle for a week now, and the first thing I did was finally get around to reading the Game of Thrones novel. Mm-hmm. So I tore through the Game of Thrones in about 4 days, and now I'm a third of the way through A Clash of Kings, which was the second season, basically. So, yeah, I can basically tell you about the first season and a half in comparison. And first of all, the characters are much more unlikable in the novels.
Cersei.
Cersei is just a cunt all around. I mean,
but she's portrayed more as kind of like a crazy person in the... Or manic
she's
in
much
the
more
show.
Stern in the books, and you're not really hearing it. You're not seeing her as much because everything is being told from a person's perspective. So when they're not in the scene with her, you don't see her.
Right.
So you're not seeing a lot from her side of things. You see a lot less of everything. There's a lot of stuff built into the show that you have a lot more scenes between people to give dialogue because
like Greyjoy.
Because you don't have the ability to just have page after page after page of the book explaining all these different houses and who these people are and what they're having for dinner and what their eye color is. If you're not showing them on screen talking to each other about something, then nothing is being told on the TV show. In the first novel, you're introduced to all the main, like, House of Stark and Lannister related characters, and most of them are much more unlikable. Ned seems a lot more just kind of like blandly honorable and kind of boring in a way. You don't feel as much for him. Catelyn is a fucking cunt. Just from the get-go. It's like all she does is harp on about how much, like, all she exists to do is hate on Jon Snow and make him feel like an unwanted asshole every moment she possibly can. And then you've got, like, the kids. Sansa is just, like, even though everything is built to be this very dark, realistic, feudal society, Sansa is still your typical stupid 12-year-old girl who all she can think about is boys. And she's super annoying. So the characters you really like are, from the beginning, Tyrion and Jon Snow and Arya, which is why they're fan favorites, because they're the characters you actually like them because they seem to not have their heads shoved completely up their asses.
Right.
Rob, like, Theon from the beginning seems like a total prick. So,
you got that right.
When he eventually gets his on the show, he's just kind of a background character for the first season and a half. Yeah. It's like until he shows up and, like, starts plotting against the Starks and wants to prove to his daddy that he's still a Greyjoy. Because, like, until that happens on the show, you barely even notice his existence. So, and also everyone's a lot older on the show. Like,
yeah.
Like, Rob is 15 when he's declared king in the North and they're at war. Which, obviously, that shit wouldn't fly so much on the show. Nor would Daenerys being pregnant at, like, age 14 after getting, like, basically, like, doggy-style raped by Khal Drogo, who's in his 30s.
Every night for, like, a year, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just like, it wouldn't have flown it. And that's why there was, like, a lot of outrage over Game of Thrones during the first season, because people apparently read the Wikipedia about these characters. Yeah. And were
they
like,
state the ages on the show for the most part. They do with the daughters some. Sansa, particularly, I think they mention her age. 14. She might be like a year or two older than in the novels. Because in the novel, I believe when it starts out, Arya is like, I want to say like 9 or 10, and Sansa's like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And Bran is like 7. And the fact that you're telling, like, he is way too smart for a 7-year-old in the stuff being told from his viewpoint.
It's I have like a 7-year-old.
He's very adult sounding. He's a little bit. Bran works better as an older character in the show because he's a little too. Whereas Rickon, the youngest child, who's basically totally glossed over in the show, he's just always standing around the background. He's much more annoying in the book and stands out more. As do the dire wolves. There's a lot more about the fucking wolves in the book than there ever is in the show. I think I read some joke about that this season where the dire wolves, like, they only show up when the budget and the CGI allows for it.
Yep, basically. Yep, that's right.
So yeah, like, the books, it's a lot more gritty. The characters more unlikable. I mean, there's some differences in overall tone and plot lines, but yeah, the show itself does a really good job of translating in 10 hours what it, like, basically, what probably, if you directly translate it, would have cost a lot more. I mean, you would have these, like, thousands of men standing around instead of, like, 40. Mm-hmm. They do with, like, 20 dudes on screen what would have been done in the book with 100.
Right.
Everything is, like, scaled down significantly. You don't have 500 different lords and bannermen showing up. You have a room with, like, 8 dudes in it. And it's everybody gets kind of compiled into other characters. One character has to take on some of the other aspects of others.
I do like what they do.
And then there's a lot of characters that in the show that you're just like, I don't know who that guy is. I know he's... It's like, in this past season, I was like, okay, this guy seems to be somebody's uncle, and then this guy is also related. I thought they were both, like, Starks, but it turned out they were both Tullys. Mm-hmm. The one of them was, I think, Catelyn's nephew, or something, or no, Rob's uncle that was getting married off at the wedding.
Oh, you mean Brutus? Yeah. he's Brutus in the show Rome. So
was he?
Yeah,
I did not know that. But
which, by the way, Rome got completely wrong on his death because Brutus didn't die like that, not even close. You fuckers. Go ahead.
I forget what the deal is. I forget if he's Catelyn's brother or something. I think he is. And then the other guy, the Blackfish, who is the guy that left in the middle of the wedding. He's like, I've had enough of this shit. I'm going outside to get some air. And he manages to escape. He is her uncle. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but I never really understood who the fuck they were on the show. Whereas at the beginning of the second book, I already know who they are as characters, at least. Right. And now I'm having to like go through and look them up occasionally and be like, was this person in the show? It's like, oh yeah, he was in the show. Okay. Now I have a little bit better of an image of who this character is. It's like, I'm finally learning who all these fucking people are on the show that are just standing in the background. I'm like, oh yeah, it's the guy with the beard. It's like, oh yes, the guy with the beard had something to do with something else. It's like, it's a show that I did not realize how goddamn hard it was to follow from season to season until I realized that I did not remember most of the details of stuff I was reading about.
Right.
It is an intensely detailed show. They do try to fit in as much as possible. Well, they do a great job. I mean... I can't really say any of it's been amiss. They're just like taking all this material and trying to shove it into every episode.
The
great failing is that there's not enough of it. You just are constantly wanting more because there's only 10 hours per year.
Because George R. R. Martin doesn't have a writing team, and whereas they have a writing team for the show. So in order, for instance, for the Red Wedding to have the impact that they needed for the Red Wedding. Like, for instance, Rob Stark's wife is there. In the books, she's not there. In fact, then in the phrase, forgive her or something, and she gets to survive, and she's basically disappears off screen in a book. But in the show, she's pregnant and there. And so the scene that where she dies is so... Most people, like, were horrified when they watched that. Most people have a physical reaction to watching a pregnant woman get brutally stabbed to death. Oh, by the way, spoilers... Not just stabbed to death, but stabbed in her belly where the baby is.
Yep, and bleed out.
And bleed out in Robb Stark. And in the book, if I remember correctly, he fights. And, like, whereas...
Whereas in the show, he's just shot by crossbowmen and is kind of...
And then stumbles around, kind of like more realistically, because he's just not going to just fight because it's such a surprise. And then...
Plus, they do not have the budget to have a long fight scene, the budget nor the time to have a long fight scene. Plus, you'd have to build a really big hall to have room for
and
the
train,
kind of fight.
And have a stunt double and train him how to fight and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's just more additional shit that does not need to be in it for the point to be made.
And Catelyn Stark is a much more sympathetic character in the show. Mm-hmm. And so when she gets her throat cut, you feel her death. You're like, oh my God. Of course, I know what happens in the books. And can I spoil that? Does anybody care what happens in the books? Like, or should I just like leave that out of this?
Eventually? Or like after this particular season? Or
yeah. I kind of give it away by saying what happens eventually by actually saying something happens with her. But anyway, let's just say something happens with her character. Her character's not gone. And it's there's only one way for that to occur, and that's all I'm going to say on it. And I probably just massively spoiled it for people, but I don't know if they're going to do that in the show because she's kind of unnecessary in the books. Like from what I was reading, she's unnecessary from then on. She's just an interesting point of fact, but yeah. But I don't know. Maybe she will become an actual like. But we'll find out next season what they do.
Things pretty compact, so if she isn't necessary to the show, she's probably out.
I'll applaud them. So
I mean, as far as most people are concerned, she's gone for good. She's off the show, but and plus they're trying to keep things They keep it. They've actually taken some of the fantasy off of the show too. There's a lot less.
They have with the dire wolves and the dragons.
The White Walkers. They're not quite as fantasy-ish. They're just more weird ice zombies. They're not wearing like magical, like shimmering armor and carrying like razor thin, like ice swords.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like these zombie monsters.
I like them in the show better, actually. So this brings me back to points I've made to you before, and I know you agree with these points, but so I love the show. You love the show. But my problem with the show and the books is get to the fucking White Walkers already. I'm sick and tired of just I understand they got to sit there and they have all these problems and oh no, and it's like Macedonia before Philip came along and blah, blah. Yeah, great. Just please get to the White Walkers for fuck's sake. And
well, I mean, you have to
endure like 7 years of this.
He set it up as originally he was going to do a trilogy.
Yeah.
And then as he started writing, it became 4 books and then 5 books and then 7 books.
Because that shit sells.
And but it's like he realized that there was just so much shit to do with these characters to get them to the point.
Whoa.
I mean,
he probably didn't realize how popular it would be.
Also, being a fan of history yourself, mm-hmm. you can imagine if you started writing something historical and you were going to eventually hit like a historical point later, mm-hmm. that you might along the way you're like, yeah, but there's all this shit I want to do with it before we get there. Mm-hmm. There's all of these other historical elements I want to explore too. It's like before we get to the fantasy shit, I'm like working on War of the Roses over here. I've got to, mm-hmm. I want to do some shit with it.
And I do like that. It's just that a lot of the books seem a lot of like stalling.
Yeah, I mean everything being told from everybody's different perspective, and it being it's almost like reading a bunch of like short stories one after the other with just kind of scenes about these people and what they're doing. You're like kind of jumping back and forth between a couple of characters. You're going from place to place. You're not seeing a full vision of things.
Exactly. I mean,
you're just kind of getting little tastes of what their particular lives are like and seeing the overall effect on the world through these different characters, which is interesting.
By the way, if you are a fan of Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire, I highly recommend the role-playing game. Even if you don't play RPGs, pick up the role-playing game from Green Ronin. Chris Premus and company really just did an outstanding job on it. It's a good read-through. You can get so much information and background on the world. It's kind of like the Black Company books and getting the also Green Ronin's Black Company role-playing game. You just get so much background on that stuff. I have both the Green Ronin publication and the old, that's the Game of Thrones, sorry, that's the Song of Ice and Fire role-playing game, and then I have the Game of Thrones role-playing game, which is from Guardians of Order, I believe. But I recommend it. It's just you get a lot of background information, and it's a very rich world. I mean, the Iron Islands are absolutely fascinating. They don't really seem that fascinating in the show. It just seems like a bunch of like essentially. Allow me to reuse a term: a bunch of like serial rapists on boats. You know,
the book already, and I'm just the point where Theon Greyjoy has basically met up with his father, who's basically like, you're basically a Stark, you've been gone for half your life, fuck mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. That's as far as it's gotten. He's basically showed back up at his father's place, and his father's being very dismissive. Like, I've already got more detail about them than I've gotten in the past 2 seasons of Game of Thrones.
They do focus on Theon more in the first season of the show because he becomes like this expositionary character mm-hmm. a bit. And that was kind of cool of him. Like, it explains a bit of like Robb Stark by focusing on.
Also, he was the only other like peer of his age. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he was like 20 and Rob was like 15, but obviously they made it a little more even. Yeah. If anything, the guy who plays Theon is more like it was more apt to play Rob.
Yeah.
Kind of reversed. All of the children with the exception of Arya and Jon Snow were like supposed to be like redheads.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be like all look like their mother. except for Arya and Jon Snow, but...
Yeah, there's a thing, Martin has a real thing about physical appearance.
Yeah, it's something that he goes into a little bit too much detail with. It's not something that matters as much. He's obsessed with, like, the details. He loves talking about people's, like, sigils and banners, mm-hmm. their, like, facial hair, their hair in general, the color, the shape, mm-hmm. the color of their eyes, the color of their skin. He likes giving very specific, like, physical descriptions of everything, as well as, like, the food, what they're eating, what they're having for dinner, the entire list of stuff at a feast.
Well, remember that guy that would sit at the role-playing game table and, like, D&D, and he would give you an ultra-detailed description of his character with a character, like, seven generations back and six uncles, and you're just like, holy shit.
And he never realized that it didn't make any goddamn difference to what he was doing.
And George R.R. Martin, bless his soul, I absolutely love the man, but he is a role player. I mean, this is basically, from my sense, like all fantasy novels for the most part are spawned from somebody's fucking role playing game. So
yeah, I mean, Wild Cards more so than this was spawned directly from role playing. I mean, which is why it was an anthology series that started out with short stories from a bunch of his co-gamers.
Right.
They basically wrote about their superhero role-playing game that they'd been playing at conventions and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he writes basically historical fiction novels that happen to be fantasy books. Everything is very much about the lives of these feudal society members.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it also happens to involve their hardships during war and fantasy elements like dragons and the undead is just like a side thing.
Yeah.
It's more about these characters trying to survive in this kind of world, which is interesting.
Hey, it
feels slow sometimes, especially if you've already watched the show and you're trying to read the books and you're like, holy God, I just want to get through this so I can understand everything, so I can get to the point where I'm reading something new, and then maybe it will be a little more more like gripping.
Well, the thing is, one of the things that like surprised me is that Game of Thrones succeeded on such a level with society, like it became a pop culture phenomenon. This, like basically all those people that, now I didn't get picked on much as a kid, but all those people who laughed and spit on all the guys that played D&D, all of you fuckers are watching this show. So here's a real big old fuck you. And they're watching the show now. I hear people talking about it who obviously mocked and shoved like gamer geeks' faces in the toilet. Now they can't shut up about fucking Game of Thrones. And I think it's awesome because there's not that many nerds who become football fans. So, well, actually there are, but that was a poor example. But I just thought of all the industrial people I know that are fucking sports fans. So, but it's good to see. I like seeing Game of Thrones fans, and it's not just like fans. It's like they're fans of dark fucking fantasy, man. Like it's dark. I love it because I'm a huge, huge fan. Like I'll read like Gene Wolfe and be like, wow, it's too bad he's so funny. And this is just how I am. I find George Martin's books to be amusing.
Yeah.
Although long, very long, and I don't have time to read them. So.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really have much of a room to make fun of people's literary proclivities, because currently I'm reading the Sigmar Omnibus, which is a Warhammer novel, so. And it's a lot of skull bashing, actually. So. 16,000 pages of skull bashing. It's not bad, actually. It's just, yeah. But
yeah. The show does a good job of translating the books, and the show is somehow popular worldwide with everyone, which is impressive. I mean, it's a very well-made, well-crafted show, which is probably the reason for its success. It was produced by HBO, which gives a certain amount of credence with people, and then it's just well-made. People are interested. It's not like some crappy sci-fi channel fantasy shit. It's a dark historical drama.
Right.
If people can be super into Downton Abbey, then they should have no problems with Game of Thrones.
Correct. Yep. It's also,
it's also the fact that fantasy and science fiction has become more pervasive in our society. It's become almost ubiquitous in its appeal. So it's popular. And we do have shows like Battlestar Galactica to thank for that popularity. I remember Battlestar Galactica being one of the first sci-fi shows that became popular amongst people who didn't like sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was cool to see.
Yeah, there's been a much greater amount of shows in the past decade and a half where it's been ever increasing the amount of genre stuff that's just made with high quality and people will watch it.
Mm-hmm.
People will watch whatever you put out as long as it's well made and probably realistic.
Right. Exactly. Oh, and Game of Thrones would also probably not be as popular if it wasn't for shows like The Tudors, which The Tudors and Rome and, well, the Borgias doesn't count, but The Tudors in Rome, I would say, definitely had a lot of people watching historical drama, and
it also just was a good... It laid the groundwork by just showing that if you put a lot of sex and violence in a historical drama, people will watch it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's I've enjoyed Game of Thrones very, very much. I haven't played the video games yet. I have them. I should play them. I don't know what to expect, really. I've seen bad reviews, but...
Yeah, I mean, I heard the RPG was okay. I don't know about the RTS game. Is it an RTS game, or is it a turn-based?
I don't know, actually. We'll have to look that up, put that in the show notes.
But yeah, I did want to try the RPG, but for so long, they had it at like $60, which I'm not paying fucking $60 for a possibly mediocre RPG. So now it's getting down to under $20. So.
$60 for a Cyanide game, which, okay. I should probably point out, I love Cyanide because they did Blood Bowl. They could have done a better job, but it's whatever. I mean,
yeah, they have a very, very mixed reputation.
You got to give Cyanide credit, though, man. They made a Blood Bowl game, called it Chaos League, and then got sued, and then became the designers for Blood Bowl. So that's pretty cool, actually. You got to, which leads me to believe. Okay, also as a fanboy, I'm happy to see Game of Thrones succeed, and I'm cool. It's cool seeing Cyanide do the Game of Thrones games. When's the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay game coming out, or TV show? Come on, please. So it's
never, yeah. Because Games Workshop would do a poor job of handling it.
Oh, did you? I sent you links to that thing that happened where the ruling against Chapter House. Which, when you go through the site, Chapter House looks like I was all for like Chapter House. I'm like, yeah. And then I finally looked at their website and went, they're saying to make miniatures. Like they're making parts like these are for your Tau figures and these are for your Eldar, and they're using copyrighted Games Workshop stuff, and you're like, well, actually, I can see why Games Workshop sued the fuck out of you.
How did they lose any of the motions?
Well, I think it's because this is total spitballing. So anyone who listens to this and knows the right story, correct me if I'm wrong. But what I gathered from it was they still have to give some of the money to Games Workshop. They're basically creating third-party materials, and since Games Workshop isn't not allowing for third-party materials and there's a demand, that's okay then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like creating, say, someone created a Warhammer 40K t-shirt because they don't have Warhammer 40K t-shirts and sells them, and then they sue you. It's more has to do with, like, I have a bunch of Space Marines that could use new arms. Here's some new arms that can be put on your Space Marines or other miniatures that are like Space Marines. That's okay, apparently. Mm. That's what they're saying. Which,
yeah, it's parts. They're interchangeable. They're not distinct on their own.
It's like making car parts for Corvettes when they're, it's not from, what is it, Chevrolet does Corvettes? Whatever. Yeah. Or Ford Mustangs. Like, you're making Ford Mustang parts, or they can go on your Ford Mustang or Honda Civic or whatever, but you're not from that company. So, and I'm all for that because Games Workshop can't do it all.
And these days they can't do anything.
Well, that's true. And it's also licensing. Like, Games Workshop is better off, in my opinion,
licensing everything out, just like they finally gave up on their role-playing games and licensed them out to Fantasy Flight. And despite Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition being a giant box board game, I like Fantasy Flight and what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I haven't played 3rd Edition, so I don't know exactly. I just have a hard time getting into heroic Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, so I just leave alone. But Dark Heresy and all the other role-playing games like Only War, Fantasy Flight has done a really good job with it, and they're one of my favorite companies because they do these type of things. And so, and someone speculated not too long ago to me that Games Workshop will probably just sell itself off.
Hopefully, that would be good. I mean, it made a mistake going public and then running after fucking stockholder money for all this time, trying to keep stock values up.
Mm-hmm.
Should have just did what they were best at, but they fucked it, so hopefully they collapse and everything gets like either sold off or the company gets basically reformed.
If I was rich, I would buy Games Workshop and buy all their licensing and just give it to Steve Jackson and Ian Livingston. Not American Steve Jackson, but British Steve Jackson. The creators of Games Workshop, and give it back to them as kind of a birthday gift. Here you go, guys. Do with it as you wish. And then get people like Rick Priestley redesigning Warhammer 40K.
The good old days.
Yes, I would like to go back to the good old days. But until then, we have Mantic, so which is one of my favorite miniatures companies. But that's the other thing. Speaking of miniatures and Game of Thrones, why can't they make Game of Thrones miniatures that aren't shitty?
I wouldn't know. I don't think I've really paid attention to miniatures.
I saw some of them, and I wasn't overly impressed with them. I could be wrong. I mean, then again, like if you make Game of Thrones miniatures, really, they just look like generic fantasy people. So, yeah. Anyway, that's not really a valid
complaint. Any historical miniature would probably be a good Game of Thrones miniature.
Oh, yeah.
Any knight will basically work.
Any knight will do. But, the Game of Thrones, if you haven't watched it yet and you're listening to this, what the fuck is wrong with you? You should be watching it.
Yeah. Anyone will like it.
Anyone.
Much.
Yeah. My mom likes it. Everyone likes it. It's,
if you like drama, violence, action, adventure, romance, nudity, and if you like anything that is part of the human condition, you will probably enjoy Game of Thrones.
Including a harbor full of ships on fire, you have to check out Game of Thrones.
And an incredibly humorous dwarf.
That's right. So, what...
that ties up to a nice, neat hour of stuff.
I think so. I think we've got... You got some serious editing to do on the first end, but...
Yeah, but hopefully when I carve out 20 minutes, it will be a nice, tight hour bundle for people to listen to and not get fucking sick of us.
In the meantime, I guess we'll close out. For you comics nerds, I highly recommend reading the comic book Uber. It's... German super soldiers win the war at the last minute for the Nazis, and it's written by Kieran Gillen, and it's if it's from Avatar Press, I highly, highly recommend it. Check out nerdtitan.com. They just made me an editor, so I like to think it's a nice positive site full of lots of nerdery cosplay stuff. I write about comic books and role-playing game materials. There's movie reviews, all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, there's Ryan with MediaGauntlet.com. And what else are you doing, Ryan? What do you want to pimp at the end here?
If you're watching a lot of TV these days, I suggest you check out Cinemax's show Banshee, which ended its first season a couple of months ago. It was really fucking good. Mm-hmm. And BBC America, or I think maybe, I forget if it's Showcase in Canada. I think it's Space in Canada.
Space is sci-fi.
I think Space in Canada and BBC America show Orphan Black, which is, I think it just ended its first season a couple weeks ago, and it's a really good fucking show that probably should be winning some Emmys, possibly for best female in a drama. Because the actress that plays nine different roles on the TV show is probably one of the best actors I've ever seen on television.
Wow. So, I just want to see it right there.
Yes, it's pretty impressive. So, Tatiana, I can't remember her last name. Something like, nah. But, yeah, Tatiana, the girl who plays various roles in the show, is really good, so I would check that out. It's a science fiction-y mystery drama thing that's been on BBC America. So
cool.
Check it out.
Excellent. All right, folks. Well, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed our little ramble for the last hour and a half. Depends on how Brian's going to edit it. Hopefully we can do another one soon because it's been a while. And
look for it in June 2014.
Excellent.